آپ ہیں ایس بی ایس ہندی کے ساتھ اور خبروں کے لیے جائیں sbs.com.au/hindi پر۔ Of late, friends, we've seen lots of Indian performers come and perform here. And in fact, I think every weekend we have singers, performers, dancers coming out from India. But surprisingly, in the second half of the 19th century, there were jugglers and performers and jadugars who came to Australia. And recounting their experiences and stories, we have with us none other than John Zubrisky, who's been a diplomat in India, correspondent, writer, author. He's the author of The Last Nizam, An Empire of Enchantment, and Jaduwala's Jugglers and Jinns. So, good day and welcome to the Hindi program, John.
Good day. It's lovely to be on the show.
Namaste.
Namaste.
Aap thori Hindi bolte hai?
Main thoda Hindi bol sakta hun.
Wonderful. Okay. Now, it was really surprising to learn that we had performers way back in the second half, you can say, of the 19th century who came out of India. So when did the first ones come out? Any idea?
We're pretty sure that the very first troupe of Indian jugglers, as they were called, because most of the acts involved juggling balls and acrobatics and things like that, as well as magic and sleight of hand. They came out in 1853 with an American circus, Rose American Circus. Now, that circus would have come to Australia because of the gold rushes. There was plenty of there was gold being discovered in New South Wales and in Victoria. There was ready audiences with disposable cash and they needed entertainment. We don't have the names of these early first troop of Indian jugglers that came with the circus, but we do have records of them in the newspapers.
Sure. You've written about two brothers, Muhammad Qasim and Muhammad Abdullah, who came here. So tell us a little about them and what were the reactions of the society then to them?
Yeah, of course. That's a fascinating story. Qasim and Abdullah came, the first records of them being in Australia date from around 1860, 1861. Now, they might have been part of that first trip that came with Rose American Circus back in 1853, and they stayed on. Another possibility is that they came from India to Australia with an Australian circus or showbiz entrepreneur, a man called George Lewis, who that's also an interesting connection because he was the first person to set up a theatre in Calcutta, Maidan, back in 1860.
In Calcutta.
And in Calcutta, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It wasn't like a circus big top, but they did lots of different acts. And the people in that, in Lewis's show, picked them all over the world.
So, and Lewis was an Australian, was he?
Lewis was an Australian, yes.
Right.
Yes, George Lewis.
Okay.
Well, I think he was actually born in England, but he lived in Australia most of his life and kept going back to Calcutta for decades after that. So back to Qasim and Abdullah. So we first hear about them performing again in the around the gold fields in southern New South Wales in the early 1860s. In 1861, they're performing near a town called Queanbeyan, which is it's like a satellite city to Canberra,
Yes. Only
a few kilometres away.
Sure.
And then they're travelling with, they've got a manager by then, a man called Madul, but his actual real name is Casarotti, and he is Sicilian. I think we're pretty sure that his father was Sicilian, but his mother might have been Bengali. He spoke enough Hindustani to befriend Abdallah and Kasim and offer to be their manager, because they wouldn't have known much English, and they certainly wouldn't have known how to get around New South Wales and organize performances and print playbills and advertise their shows. So he managed them. But back in about 80, I can't remember the exact month, but they suddenly reported that their manager had stolen their savings, which was about £100, a lot of money in those days, and their horses. So they were left penniless and without any transport, and they managed to pool their resources and performed in wool sheds and in country pubs and things like that. They were jugglers. Kasim was an expert swordsman. That was his main act, was a sword act. So he could slice a cucumber on Abdullah's chest and apple that was on his head with one swipe of his very sharp sword without injuring him. And they did other juggling sorts of acts. Sure. So they... eventually, they make their way back to Sydney. They join up with another circus. They're performing. And then in 1863, a stockman who's looking for lost cattle at a place called Sawpit Gully, which is somewhere south of Queanbeyan. We're not exactly sure where it is now. He found a coat with a playbill stuffed in its pocket, a playbill for one of Abdallah and Kasim's acts. The stockman alerted the owner of the nearest farm. They went out there the second day and they found the remains, skeletal remains of a European. Well, they're not sure if it was European, but there was remains there. They weren't sure how long they'd been there, because wild dogs had torn at the flesh. But there was
human remains
of human remains. Yeah. So you know, this was obviously a murder case. There was evidence that the body, that there was stab wounds. They could tell that from the coat that was
found hanging
near the murder scene, and they put two and two together and thought and assumed that this was Kasim and Abdullah's manager, and they tracked Kasim and Abdullah down to, I think they were performing in Liverpool then, and they arrested them and charged them for murder.
So they were charged for murder, and were they found
they
guilty?
Were charged.
And John Zabruski has this to say.
Well, this is the thing. Yes, they were. Now, you've got to remember, this is 1863. These are two Indians who would have very, very limited English. They did find an interpreter for them, but they would have had no understanding of the legal system. They, of course, professed their innocence. They were outsiders. They were Indians. There was quite a bit of racial prejudice at the time. The remains were never positively identified. I mean, they were too far gone. This was in the days before DNA sequencing and things like that, so they couldn't tell exactly the body or the remains of the body, whether they belonged to a Caucasian or an Indian. There was some hair which suggested that they might have South Asian, but this was never conclusively proven. This got huge coverage in the press because it was quite a sensational case.
Right. And how did the press react?
Kasim. Well, very much, I mean, the majority press sided with the police and the magistrates, you know, who thought that these guys were, and the prosecutors, and thought that these two Indians were indeed guilty. But there were sections of the press that came to their defense, saying, pointing out quite rightly that this was all very circumstantial, that the body had never been positively identified. It could have been there for years. It could have been there for just a few months. The Kasim and Abdallah themselves pointed out, you know, if they had committed the murder, why would they have left playbills, which would have evidence that would have pointed back to them. They said that these would have been planted on the body to implicate them.
Oh.
that there was a couple of mysterious characters in the vicinity at the time when the murder was allegedly committed. You know, somebody who'd deposited a large sum of money with a local publican. There were all sorts of things. There was even a prisoner in Goulburn jail, which is where they were tried at the magistrate's court in Goulburn, and there was a prisoner in the jail there who claimed that another prisoner had not necessarily confessed to the murder, but basically said that the two Indians were innocent. So there was a lot of, it became really quite a cause célèbre. And there was one particular newspaper called The Empire, which was, interestingly enough, edited by Henry Parkes. And it came to their defense very strongly, saying that this was all very circumstantial. This was all justice because these two Indians didn't understand the legal system. They couldn't defend themselves properly because they couldn't speak the language, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Sure. But they were found guilty. Qasim was sentenced to death by hanging, and he died on the gallows. And Abdallah was sentenced to hard labor. But after a few years, his health broke down, and they decided that they would repatriate him back to India. So they put him on board a ship. But we don't know what happened to him after that, whether he died before he got to India, whether he got to India and then just disappeared. We don't know.
Oh, what an interesting story. So there were two sides in the public, and the press. Some found them totally guilty, and the others felt that they didn't get the justice that they deserved.
Yes. Yeah, there was even a local politician from the area also came to their defense.
Right. Any other anecdotes that you would like to narrate to us?
Well, only that, Abdallah and Qasim were certainly the main not the only people. Indian performers. Yeah, there were other troops of Indian. Again, they called them jugglers, but they included magicians and nautch dancers and musicians and snake charmers and all that that came out to Australia. There was in 1880 there was something called the Afghan Museum and Oriental Living Wonders show that had East Indian jugglers, a nautch dancer, a ventriloquist, a man who could imitate birds, beasts, and reptiles. There was also they called it a museum because somebody had collected various trinkets, costumes, curiosities, musical instruments, and so on. So this again toured Victoria, New South Wales, South Australia. It was very popular. Theatrical entrepreneur by the name of Harry Lyons, who brought this troupe out from India. He himself had spent many, many years in India touring his own troupe of entertainers around the various towns and cantonments and larger cities like Calcutta and Bombay. So that seems to have gone well, and there was no mistreatment of those people. But then there was another troupe that came out in 1889. And the person who brought them out was a man called Charles Bastard. That was his actual name.
No.
And it was more like a free show. There was he included, there was a five-legged cow, for instance, that he brought out. Yeah. And then there were jugglers. There were even these two. I think that later found out that they were actually lepers, but they called them monkey boys. Which is a very derogatory term, but I guess they were just there. This was like a freak show, they wanted to get maximum publicity and people curious about these things. But this troupe was terribly mistreated.
They
were housed in terrible conditions. There was more than a dozen of them, including women and some children. And in about November 1889, October, November, they staged a mutiny in Melbourne, where they were demanding that they be demanding their wages, demanding that they be repatriated back to India. So So the first Indian mutiny on Australian soil was
by Indian jugglers,
by a troop of Indian jugglers. Yes, yes, and again, it made, you know, it was all over the press, and they stopped traffic in Swanston Street and all of that. So it was fascinating.
And were there a lot of Indians there at that time?
Look, there seems to have been. There were a lot of Indian hawkers in Australia. Yeah. I mean, when I say a lot, you know, it was numbered probably in the thousands. Sure. And again, India in those days, you've got to think of the British Empire. They could have come from the northwest frontier, so they could have been Pathans, they could have been Sindhis, they could have been Bengalis. They were from all over the subcontinent, really.
I was reading somewhere there were about 7,700 people who claimed to be of Indian origin before 1901. Yeah. So you're right, there must have been a lot of hawkers, cameliers, and others over here.
Yes, that's right. But I think there was also in the cities that there was business people, because I know that in the case of the Indian jugglers who staged the mutiny, and they were from Madras, and the newspaper reports speak of the Madrassis of Melbourne pooling their resources because they thought that they'd been treated this way, and they put pressure on the local government to repatriate these Indians back to Madras.
Were they repatriated?
They were repatriated. They were repatriated back to
Madras or Calcutta, wherever they came from.
Great. Madras,
Thank you so much for sharing your stories with us today. It's a pleasure talking to you. Pleasure talking to you.
Thank you.
ऐसी ही और कहानियाँ सुनना चाहते हैं? Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify या फिर जहाँ आप podcast सुनते हैं, वहाँ हम हैं।